The haunting legends of a mighty Bigfoot have made man's blood run cold for centuries, some terrific and some terrifying. The Southern Appalachian Mountains whisper the mysteries of this strange and powerful creature through its smoky hills and ominous embrace. This is Brandon Thomas with Expanding Reality, elated to announce our very first Expanding Reality Excursions Befriending Bigfoot event. This is going to take place on a beautiful 27-acre ranch in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. This intimate conference is going to feature Bigfoot adventure hikes in three different states, river kayaking, nightly presentations from such incredible presenters as Alexander Petikoff, Chris Matthew, Dave Zed, Preston Dennett, and many more. Also, we're going to be doing some UFO watching, some jam sessions, all kinds of hangouts. Visit expandingrealitypodcast.com/events for more information. That's expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Blue Collar Mystics, the under-the-hood approach to the depths of human consciousness. So many mysteries, so little time, so many big words. That's why we aim to take the mystical and make it practical, usable in your everyday life. And you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your story. What happened when you started asking yourself the real questions? Like, who am I? What is this? Is it a hologram? Is this some kind of weird cosmic joke? Hey, these are the questions that we are trying to get to the bottom of as we explore the final rabbit hole together here as Blue Collar Mystics. Welcome, everybody. We are streaming live here on YouTube. We are in the Facebook group and on Rockfin as well. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for being here. I'm excited. We are doing the Transurfing Safari. I'm your host, Owen, aka Bootsy. You know, I'll be dancing in the evenings. And then we've got, of course, the lovely and fabulous Abby Johnson. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Yeah. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. I'm excited that we're getting through to the sort of more technical parts of this book. We've done a lot of theory kind of stuff up to now, and it's been really fun. I love the theory. I could just kind of like hang out in that a lot. It's like it's a lot of mental deliberating, deep thought, ideas, nuanced, you know, energetic movements and stuff. And I love that. But I think we're starting to really move into the more, hey, we've learned the theory and here's how to apply some of it. Here's some techniques.
Yeah. It builds the map. Like we've built the map. And I feel like that's why you can't just, as much as like we all love Tufty, the priestess, like you can't just jump into it without having the theory behind it. I mean, you can, but it really does help.
Yeah, it really does help to have a foundation. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I just want to thank everybody for being here. And I have a couple things that I want to share and announce. I just came from seeing Patton Oswalt at the 40 Watt here in town. And it was amazing. My friend Lanny Farmer, he opened the show and just absolutely crushed it. So proud. So happy to see him do so well.
And it's just awesome. I love seeing people's dreams come true. I say all that to say, you know, yeah, I'm just excited. And I've actually got him in tow with me when I go and hang out at the Expanding Reality little excursion, Befriending Bigfoot, which we played a little clip of up at the top. So yeah, just I'll share this real quick. It's in May. It's up in Blue Ridge, Georgia, with the Expanding Reality folks, Chris Matthew, Alexander Petikoff. It's going to be a lot of fun. Come and check it out and hang out. I got a special treat planned for anybody who comes to that. And also, we'll be at Eclipse at the Canyon with the Grimerica guys a little bit later this month, early part of April, actually. So next month, early part of next month. A lot of fun. Really excited. And I'm stopping in a few places on the way. I'm adding some dates. I just added, I'll be in Boone, North Carolina tomorrow. So if you're up in the Western North Carolina area, come see me, please. Doing 30 minutes, as an opener for Alex Malt, who's been on Comedy Central and a lot of stuff. It's gonna be really fun. I'll be in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend. Try to add a show on Friday, but I'll be there Saturday night and then, be hitting the road on the Get Forked tour. And I'm calling it that because we're bringing some vibrational tuning forks with us along the way. I'll be documenting some of this stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, I hope to meet a lot of people along the way and kick it with the Grimerica guys at the Eclipse of the Canyon. We'll be in Austin. We'll be in New Orleans and Panama City Beach, Florida. So really excited. Come say hi. Would love to see anybody along the way talk about this stuff. I'm really excited about tonight's episode. This is kind of a shorter chapter, and I don't know, like the first time I read it, I was like, energy. But I mean, everything comes back to this. It's really all about energy and how can we conserve energy and how can we use energy efficiently and effectively in order to accomplish our goals. Like that whole chapter on pendulums is about how pendulums steal your energy. And so us being basically stewards of energy, that's kind of what we are. And he gives some techniques in this chapter. We'll talk a little bit about it. I've also made a video a little while ago about it, which, yeah, if you want to learn the beginning part of the technique, check that out. But it really all comes down to this idea of energy and how can we be wise and efficient in order to get the things that we want accomplished, done. Because there's going to be challenges. There's going to be unforeseen circumstances literally all the time. So how can we position ourselves to keep as much of our energy as possible and use it for intention as opposed to giving it away to destructive pendulums?
So can I take this back to Eclipse at the Canyon for a second?
100% you can.
Okay. So is the National Guard going to be there? Because at the best viewing points in Oklahoma, the National Guard's going to be here. So I'm just curious.
Wow. I don't know. Probably not. I'm just hoping for pure zombies to come out. Like, what would be a better way to end this movie than to hang out in the desert and shoot zombies with the Grimerica guys? Let's go.
Unless you know what I mean? Turn into zombies.
That'll be kind of interesting too. You know, like I don't want to turn into a zombie, but I'm just saying that would be fascinating if that actually did happen. Are you nervous? Oh, you're kind of cut out. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
Your brain might not taste too good.
Your brain might taste really good. Oh boy. Okay, I think you're back. And you're frozen. Yeah, I don't know if there will be zombies, but so be it if there are. You know, I don't know really.
I feel like my internet connection doesn't like Tuesdays.
Is that what it is? It's just the day? It usually works well?
Yeah, I feel like it is.
Well, I think we're back. Yeah, we're back in sync now. It's all good.
Okay, good.
but
hopefully I don't know. Last.
Yeah, well, it's probably because you were talking about zombies and the apocalypse on the eclipse, and that's probably what happened. You know, the powers that be, the pendulums, the archons, they heard you and they glitched us out for a second.
They did.
I was just talking about it'll be a dream come true, you know, to be hanging out during that with those guys. Like, who's going to be in a better position? We'll laugh and kick it and shoot zombies. I don't know.
Headshots. You have to go for the kill shot right in the head. Don't waste.
I don't know. There's so many different like zombie protocols, you know. It's like, I'm not really sure. Are they going to be like
the fast? Have you never watched Zombieland? He's got the whole zombie Bible.
Dude, I have watched Zombieland. It's great. But there's like different zombies in different movies. There's different protocols. It just depends on who you ask. There's a lot of different authorities on this subject. So I'm not trying to be controversial here. That's not what this podcast is about. You know, I'm not trying to stir up trouble.
Well, zombies still have energy. So I would think as they deteriorate, they'd have less though. So
yeah, they're kind of like not even in control of themselves, right? Like they're like an asleep sort of unconscious being that is just eating blood, and they don't seem very smart. You know, I always thought it was a metaphor, you know, for like normies or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I used to be, frankly. I'm not judging, but it's like, but what is the movie They Live? And then they interview the director. Remember that movie They Live? Such a good movie. He puts on the glasses and shit starts changing, you know?
Yeah,
he's like, it's a documentary. That's
what he totally looks like Vadim Zeeland too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The guy looks like Vadim Zeeland. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's amazing. It's amazing. But yeah, I mean, this whole chapter about energy, it really all does come down to this, you know? And I used to not give this a whole bunch of credence in some ways, just because like, I frankly wanted excuses to not exercise or like eat poorly or drink or whatever. Because I just didn't want to face it. You know, anytime somebody would talk about, you know, things that made me feel uncomfortable or I found distasteful, I was like, no, I don't want to deal with that. And you know, to each in their own and in their own time as well, you know, you have to see kind of what works for you. And my body has changed, over the past couple of years. So my tastes therefore changed as well. And I've preferred to live a little bit cleaner, and I really enjoy it. But I think that's part of the process too. You know, understanding, he distinguishes first and foremost about the difference between physiological energy and free energy. And so, obviously physiological energy is like eating, sleeping, and getting good exercise and any,
all the little things that have to do with your body.
Yep.
But it's not quite the same as free energy. Is it free energy? Is that what he calls it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But even if you look into the hermetic stuff, the magical stuff, like they emphasize very strongly how important physical activity is. And so I do encourage anybody to do some sort of activity, get out there and just walk around, get out there and ski or skate or bike or whatever it is that you enjoy, you know, and just starting with walking. You know, this,
well, because you're never going to improve your whole energy body or free energy sources if you don't improve your physiological energy. You have to do it. They go hand in hand, I think.
I agree. You know, and he does distinguish between the two, but especially depending on where you are, if you're a hard case, like today I was on the phone with someone who, you know, suffers health problems, right? Like they're looking for coaching. And honestly, if you have some sort of a, I don't know what you would call it, like a health issue that's like a long-term chronic illness, that's not really in my wheelhouse. You know, it's like, I don't really know how to, deal with that. Right. Like I'm not a medical person at all, like in the slightest.
Right. You can do is help with mindset.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. And that's a big part of it, you know, but
it's a huge part of it.
People want a magic fucking pill. They want a miracle right now. They want to be able to go from 0 to 100 and they want to be able to be like, well, I feel terrible and I hate everything. And I just want to be able to love everything all the time and feel great all the time. And I'm like, yeah, me too. You know, that'd be great. But unfortunately that's not really how that works. You know, we build up energy, we build up strength. It's like a muscle. It's like anything else. We have to start small and begin to build on that, whatever that is. I was talking to some folks in our Telegram chat. By the way, if you're checking this out, there's a Telegram chat link underneath the video. Come hang out with us, chat with us, kick it. I love chatting with folks and I feel kind of weird. Like I don't want to just spam the group all the time. But I try to share stuff in there and I definitely engage with people when they, you know, share in there. And I appreciate the fact that people share. And a couple guys were chatting last night, just like, how do you sort of manage all this stuff? You've got maybe a long-term goal that you're working toward and you've got all these tasks and to-dos that you need to take care of. And how do you manage it without feeling overwhelmed, right? Without making it super important. And that's something that has down. Now that's in my wheelhouse, you know, like that's what I do every day. And so I think from an energetic standpoint, you know, whatever we can do to shift the energy and change the energy and use energy in the most efficient manner is going to establish some momentum. And then once that momentum starts to go, it grows and it gets bigger and bigger and more powerful and continues to carry on, right? It's like the wave of fortune or, you know, the opposite.
Induced transition.
Exactly. Because we get that momentum going. So it's like the first thing you need to do is just get some momentum and give yourself some time and space. Allow that energy to work, you know, freely and start to open it up and add a little bit, just a little bit, just a little tiny bit. And then from there, you start to establish the process. You start to believe and have faith in the process. And then once that happens, the results become more automatic. You're having evidence now, and you can begin to grow and develop and use more and more energy toward your intention, toward your desired outcome. And the way to do that is to just be very one step in front of the other, in front of the mailbox, and emphasizing specifically one step in front of the other, because you can't take one step to the mailbox. It takes 50 steps to get to the mailbox. You don't get to the mailbox. You can't just jump over there. You know what I'm saying? You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to run out of energy.
And you don't have to sit and obsess about every single little step. You just got to make the first one. And then they kind of just all fall in line. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that if you sit there and think about the process too much, you're using your brain, you're using your mind too much, and you're not using your heart. You're not allowing it to happen. You're creating all the excuses for why it can't happen. And that's what you're going to get, the why it can't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, from this perspective, and there's a lot of different ideas when it comes to like self-help and productivity, and this all goes hand in hand. Everything is energy, like literally everything. It's so vital, and it's coursing through us. We'll get into that. But the way that I manage my day, like there's a couple of different sort of approaches. One is eat the frog first thing, like do the most difficult thing first so that you feel accomplished and you've got momentum. And I think that's a really usable framework. Another is do what you want to do right now. Do what feels good right now. And then you get that done and you really focus on that and you become immersed in it. And I really like that approach as well. And I try and use a mix of those two and generally just ask myself, what is the most important thing I can do right now? Like I've got long-term goal. Long-term goal is going to take a long time, right? We're talking probably several years for what it is. And then moving back, you know, I made videos about this, just backwards engineering to where you are now. And when he talks about visualizing the process, it's not about visualizing how it's going to happen, but what the next thing is. So easy example, you know, if you want to learn how to, become a world-class chef, and that's your long-term thing, you first have to learn how to make a bomb ass peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to be like an easy milestone, you know? And then the next milestone is like beef bolognese or something. I don't know. And then the next milestone and on and on and on until you become masterful at what that thing is, which is going to be an investment of time. It's going to take time. There's no substituting experience. And so, you know, giving yourself the time can free up energy so that you don't have to stress. Like, I think that's part of the reason why he encourages us to take the fortress by lengthy siege, right? Like all that importance, you know, and all that tension of like, oh God, I got to do all these things. I got to figure out. And imagine from that perspective, right? Like you're trying to become a world-class chef. You're great, but you're like, I got to do bolognese. I got to do lasagna. I got to do peanut butter. I got to do marshmallows. I got to do, you know, s'mores. I got to learn all these things all at once. What am I going to do? Now you're just overwhelmed and you're, energy is just being like, it's like a feeding frenzy for your energy. And so what is the thing that you can do? Maybe the thing that you can do is to just relax and watch a cooking video or like go for a walk. I don't know.
Play the long game, like the elites, you know, that in their world domination quest, you know, it could be, have been going on for thousands of years for all we know.
I mean, who even knows? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, and that's like the Fabian society and all that. That's why their mascot is a turtle. It's because it's just about moving slowly. It's incremental socialism rolled out over long periods of time. It's like the boiling frog, right? Like if you put a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. But if you put it in there and you gradually warm it up, it just starts to get relaxed, you know? Same kind of thing. And if we can put ourselves in a position where we can focus just on the next task and begin to enjoy it, then it frees up a lot of energy. It allows us to use our intention efficiently, right? Like we don't want to waste our energy, but we want to use it toward intention. So ideally we're learning first and foremost about pendulums so that we can keep our energy from external destructive pendulums and focus it on ourselves and our intuition and our intention. And then from there, just eating the elephant one bite at a time. Can we hit the lotto with the plate technique? Asking for a friend. Dude, you can do whatever the hell you want. Yeah, 100% you can do it. And there's somebody in our Telegram chat who has hit lottery. I don't play the lottery. It's just not my game. You know? I have other games that I like to play.
Me too. I like slot machines.
Fair enough.
Though really, I don't go. I should maybe be more intentional about playing slot machines, but I'm there for the entertainment value. So
that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you got to learn to rest. That's another thing that he talks about. You know, learning to rest. If you don't know how to rest, you don't know how to work. If you don't know how to work, you don't know how to rest. And so it's, you know, it's a little bit balancing, you know.
It's always background balance.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's about that because keeping that energy and keeping it relatively stable, right, it's pretty, pretty useful for this practice, right? Like we want to be able to harness as much free energy as possible, which is different than physiological energy, but they do go hand in hand. It's like if you're having recurring health problems, you know, or you're sluggish, you don't have a lot of energy, then you need to first and foremost kind of address that and start to build that energy up a little bit at a time through whatever means. One of the things that he talks a bit about are the energy exercises in the book, which is that you have basically two currents of energy running through you. And I'm really excited about this, because he talks about the electromagnetic field and stuff, and we're about to go on tour, Get Forked.
Cause it all comes back around to that. Like I think of the whole, that's exactly what I think of. Eileen, is that her name? The one who wrote the
Eileen
book about.
Eileen Day McCusick. Yeah.
Yeah. It really kind of put things into perspective for me. If everything is a resonance, if everything is energy, and it is, it's all like sine waves, you know, then there's no reason why. I mean, it's so much more manipulatable. I don't even know if that's a word, but easier to manipulate than you think reality is.
Yeah. Well, I think that I was thinking about this earlier today. It's like magic has to kind of become a little bit mundane. Not that it like loses its, you know, amazing qualities or doesn't dazzle you anymore, but it just needs to be just kind of there all the time. Like it needs to feel normal.
Yeah, exactly. It can't feel like it's incredulous and like you, it's not possible, because if you feel that way all the time, then that's what you're going to, I mean, that's going to be your reality. But if you feel like magic is something that you like expect from your world, you know, for whatever reason, then that's exactly, you'll get magic.
Yeah. I think that there's magic all around us all the time. It's just a matter of acknowledging it and appreciating it, just relaxing, you know, into it and allowing it to be. Then it's more perceivable and it's easier to incorporate into your life. It does need to feel, yeah, natural. I like that, Laura. That's really good. Yeah, it should.
But that's the thing, is that I will say this. It doesn't all have to be explainable, because if you explain things away, then you take away the magic as well. So you have to be willing, and I don't mean by faith, like just willing to accept that there are some things that you can't explain. And that's the idea of the Nahual in like the Carlos Castaneda stuff, is that there's the unexplainable, and that's okay. And that's actually like, that's where the magic comes in too. But you have to allow yourself to just accept it, though, that there are some things that you can't explain and you'll never be able to.
Yeah. It's there's a saying in comedy that whenever you dissect the joke, you ruin it. You know, yeah. There's an old saying where there's these three guys who would do a bit during their stage play. And one guy thought the way that he moved was what made the joke. And the other guy thought this line that he said, and then the other guy thought it was his reaction that made such a great laugh. So what they decided to do was deconstruct the joke. They were like, okay, well, you don't do the gesture this time. And then the next time they had the guy not tell the joke. And then the next time they had the other guy not do his reaction. And they tried it all out and it never got a laugh. And then they put it all back together and it never worked again.
Oof. Wow.
There is something to that. Like I see it nightly, you know, like I'm in those environments where magic can happen, right? Like it's connecting in the moment to what's going on and calling the room, they call it, or doing like some crowd work, you know, a joke comes back and it's just kind of natural. It just happens. It's there. And it's the comedian's job to kind of pick up and sort of tune in to that. But it's a very much of an energetic, I would say even like a, I guess it's a pendulum, right? Like it's a collective energy that people are building in a room. And so there's a lot of, like really cool things that can happen as a result of building that energy. And, it's very magical, very much in the moment. I love that. That's why I do what I do. That's why I enjoy it. And I always have, I like this question here from Ryan. He's not amused, even though he's a rubber ducky with a beautiful wig. Let me just say.
Met the right muse yet then.
Right, right. He says he talks about aura, and I'm a little confused about energy currents, arrows. Are they coming out of the body? Or are they inches away from the body? See, this is a good question.
The body.
Yeah. So there's two sort of things about that. So the arrow thing, that's the turning the key exercise. Probably should do a video about that. I've been meaning to, but I've just been kind of busy. It hasn't been the most important thing for me to do yet.
That's three chapters away anyway. We're good.
Okay, good. Well, that explains why it hasn't been the most important thing. But so the energy that he's talking about, so the arrows are really from an exercise that you can do called turning the key. And it's a visualization practice. So we will get into that. But the energy currents are coming basically through the center part of your body, very close to your spine. Both are close to your spine. One is coming down and the other is coming up. So I made a video about this very recently, within the past like 2 weeks. And I go through and I even get all guru-y and I'm like, let's do a breathing exercise together and I'm vulnerable or whatever. But the thing is, it's like you're pulling up energy on your inhale from the ground up. Okay. And then on the way down, energy is coming down closer to your spine on the way out and out through your tailbone. And ultimately, those two energetic streams are going to collide in the exercise and create an electromagnetic field around you. That's how you're supposed to visualize it, at least. Yeah. So that's what the aura is.
What I like about this, though, is that he's basically describing the chakra system, because you're supposed to imagine that the ascending current comes up from the ground through your perineum area, which is your root chakra, and comes out the top of your head. So, like, but when we hear about the classic chakra system, the seven chakras and the energy centers that go up the center of your body, I don't think that you often hear that there's two different separate flows, an ascending and a descending current. You just think of one, you know, that you have this one channel. And Vadim tells you that, you know, there's two separate channels, that they're physiological, they're inside your body, and they're close to your spine. And so, you know, it makes sense why you would still have blockages and stuff in a certain chakra, because it might be the descending current. It might be one or the other. So, and if you think of them kind of like hoses, that's how I think of it. I think of like tubes running through my body. And he says that, you know, they can become constricted, and probably most people who are not conscious of it, who are not doing these energy exercises, they are pretty constricted or blocked. So, you know, the more that you put your focus on them and do this little breathing technique, this energy technique, the more you widen those channels.
Yeah, it's a cool exercise. I like to do it when I'm walking, you know, but it goes hand in hand with the Eileen Day McCusick stuff and grounding, you know, like standing on the grass and stuff barefooted, you know, because we are electrical beings. So we have an electromagnetic field. It's just science. I mean, it is what it is. And he's talking about the chakras coming through. And what's cool about the Eileen Day McCusick stuff is like those vibrational forks are like tapping into different areas of the chakras that are also part of the electromagnetic field, and the vibrations can center those out. What she speaks about in the book, that's so fascinating. It's like, if your, let's say, throat chakra is a little bit off, you might feel like you're not heard. If it's off the other way, you might feel like you can't speak, you know, and like thyroid might be an issue if your throat chakra is off. And so by using these different forks on the different chakras, you know, you're basically retuning your electromagnetic field. And you can do that visually and through vibration. There's a lot of different ideas about it. I'm super excited to get to play with these forks. I cannot freaking wait. This is going to be insane. And it's something that I've been looking forward to doing for a long time. And everybody that we kind of come in contact with, it's going to be a really cool opportunity to experiment and play around with them, you know, to have some fun and fork them up, you know. but yeah, I mean, it's all the same stuff. And one of the things that I really like about transurfing is this: whatever works for you, you know, if you don't visualize it the same way that Vadim explains it in the book, and one of the big things that he talks about in this chapter too is like, don't try too hard. Trying too hard is making it harder, it's making it worse, it's not really that helpful to you. So you've got to figure out what works for you. Some people will have a hard time visualizing. Some people might not sense it the same way. But I love what Derek Condit says. He's like, we have many senses, not just five. So sense it however you sense it. If you don't sense it visually, then that's okay. It doesn't matter. You know, how does that feel? You know, what is the sensation? And the more that you visualize it, and when you get into chaos magic and stuff, you know, the circle and all this stuff, it's all about, and the fact that, you know, mage, imagination, magic, it's all the same stuff. It's all the same word. It's used to, I don't know anything witch. About that.
It means witch in Latin.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
Educating me. And I love it. But yeah, that's the gist of it, is to just work through your imagination, work through your inner your personal sensory ability, whatever that is.
But back to the word try, because that's one of the first things he says. So he's telling you immediately that one thing that you can do, like what the way to sense your aura actually is to like think of your skin and think about the area around your skin, feel the energy coming off your skin. And he says, notice I didn't tell you to try. I just told you to do it. And that's because you can do this. Like, you don't have to try to do it. Just do it. And then suddenly you can feel it. Maybe not at first, but you will. So there is no, I mean, gosh, that sounds like a Mr. Miyagi thing or something. I don't know.
It's from Star Wars. There is no try. There is only do. Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
But I mean, the feeling your skin thing, that's all over hermetic magic. Like, there's so many corollaries with this. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. So that's that part, like the feeling your physical aura is literally just kind of like feeling the surface of your skin all over your whole body and then kind of pushing that outwards. So are we getting into the whole method of it all?
Yeah, yeah, why not?
So he says, so, you know, stand up and imagine from your feet, you know, and then coming up through your perineal area and moving through all throughout your body, the channel moving upwards and coming out your head and then kind of spilling over like a fountain. And then when you breathe out, you're going to imagine the current coming down through your head, along your spine, through your body, coming out your perineal area and into the ground and spilling out. So like a fountain, almost making you like a giant egg or whatever, like. And then you push out from your skin. Then you feel the energy from your skin and you kind of fill in those gaps and you structure it. Like, you make this a shield, and it literally takes you minutes, maybe not even a minute. You can do it pretty quick. You just practice on your in-breaths and out-breaths until you don't have to breathe to feel one current or the other. You just feel them. But he says that the more that you practice this and the more that you do it throughout your day, it is a shielding technique. So if you're, you know, into magic and all that, it's a way to shield your energy. It's not infallible though, but it is like a good way to protect your aura, protect your bubble. But pushing out from your skin kind of fills in all the little gaps and holes. So that are coming, you know, that are not filled by the ascending and descending currents. So
Yeah. And it's a practice to kind of like help to expand your awareness. One of the things Eileen Day McCusick says in that book is the mind is not in the body. The body is in the mind. And so we often think that the mind is in the body, but we are aware, like if someone's staring a hole in the back of you, you feel that, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you're around, you feel other people's energy, other things that are going on in the room. You can tune in to those things. And it's through that electromagnetic field. It's very sensitive. So tuning into that and knowing that, hey, I'm not just my body. Like, I'm an extension of it. Like, I go further than this. There's a whole, you know, sphere of awareness around each and every one of us. I think when we get in those tight knit situations too, this is why pendulums work so well. You know, you're in a big crowd or something and everyone's like, electromagnetic fields are like crossing, they're crossing the streams, you know? And so it's like really easy to pick up on those nuanced feelings. And if everyone's irritated or if everyone's in a certain mood or riotous, then that's contagious inside that container.
Well, have you ever felt somebody just walk into the room and they're in a bad mood and like, mm-hmm. they change the whole entire environment?
Yeah.
And he does talk about this, but my sister is one of those people. We were all like sitting out at the lake, you know, drinking and having a good time, you know, sitting around a little fire pit, and she was just in a bad mood. She's just mad at everyone and very much like victim mentality. And she comes out and everyone gets quiet. It's like this dark cloud just descended, and somebody looks over and they go, well, that's just weird. That's the darkest cloud of energy I've ever experienced. This is like a non-woo-woo person, but they felt it, you know. And it's like, it's amazing how, you know, one person can really tank everyone else's energy, but it's because your electromagnetic field, it's not necessarily, they're putting it out there loudly.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
It doesn't take much to pick up on it.
It really doesn't. Yeah. There's like, it's like when I first started really, I would say, deconstructing my worldview and looking at other worldviews and stuff, I would get into things like objectivism and very like left brain ideologies, which I still am a big fan of. Like, I love logic. I think that's a very important and lost skill for a lot of people. And it's, if you don't have logical, critical thinking skills and a way to sort of defend yourself against people, then it can be very, very difficult. But it doesn't negate the emotional and more mystical things that are happening. It's like you can read an Ayn Rand book and come away with a lot of really, really good heady information, but there's still like something missing there. You know, there's something emotional, there's social dynamics, there's the way that we react to each other, there's our subconscious tendencies and the things that are not on the surface, that are not part of the prefrontal cortex, that frankly, when 99.99999% of the time anyway, you know, your DNA and your subconscious patterns are going to win. Even you can fight with all your might with your conscious mind, and unless you're able to retrain your subconscious, it's a losing battle, you know? So.
Because you're a robot and you're coded to do a certain thing.
I mean,
you reprogram it. I mean, if you want to think of it that way.
I mean, yeah, that's,
you are electro.
That's not an untrue statement. Like, yeah, we are very, very programmed, and there is wiring, there's genetic, evolutionary, whatever, however it comes. I don't know how long we've been here, maybe millions of years, maybe 6,000. I don't know. I'm not an expert on it. I don't really care.
I don't think the experts don't know shit.
No, no one knows it. That's the most amazing thing about all parts of this. Like, no one can tell you what reality is. It blows my mind every day. But there are these subconscious processes that are at work within us that basically can, you know, control us on a day-to-day basis, and we can become more conscious of them, and we can adjust them over time. But it's not something that just happens overnight. It's like everyone wants this magic pill to get to this end slide where I can do 60 things well, but I'm not interested in beginning the journey and learning to do one, you know, learning to do the second, and then building and establishing a process, because processes are far superior to goals. Goals are great, but creating a process is going to make the goal the byproduct.
So after we're talking about doing this energy exercise and kind of building up your shield, I guess we should talk about energy vampires. What do you got on that, Bootsy?
Oh, energy vampires, my favorite.
I'm sure everybody's heard the term before, but, you know, it really is a thing.
No.
There are people who are just like wanting to loose you. Because it makes them feel good.
Right. Yeah. I think some people can't generate energy on their own.
Yeah.
And so they look to other people to basically feed on their energy. And you'll see this with narcissists, sociopaths, psychopaths, people like that, people who manipulate and take advantage of other people and try to control them and use them and things like that. And it's a very, very real thing. A lot of these people, I mean, these are the reptilians, you know, they're the people who, who really don't, have a lot of empathy. At the same time, like, I don't think that's entirely their fault either. You know, I mean, I do think there is a nurturing aspect or a tendency in our culture toward that. I think there are more psychopaths, there are more sociopaths. That type of behavior is now more accepted and rewarded than it's ever been, in my lifetime, at least. And probably over the course of a very long time, but I still,
our society kind of sets it up that way. I do think that it kind of,
it incentivizes sociopathy.
Western civilization.
Yeah. You know, and in modern Western civilization, I would say, because old school Western civilization, you know, Greek, Roman, not necessarily.
Yeah. It wasn't that way.
Right? Like the Stoics weren't like, fuck them up. Just, you know, like, trick them, you know.
Oh no, I'm thinking like Hollywood Californication.
Oh yeah, very, very much so. But yeah, that's a very real thing. It's just something that you need to learn to watch out for, be attentive to, and be careful not to judge the people who operate that way. Because at the end of the day, it's a very difficult and really unfulfilling existence to be true.
Doing the energy exercise isn't enough. This is called boundaries. That's where you have to, I mean, that's not what he talks about in the book, but really that's how you deal with energy vampires or people that are trying to lose you. It's have boundaries.
Yeah.
It's okay to say no.
Yeah. What is your credo, right? Like, what is it? And put those boundaries in place, because what's right for you is not necessarily going to be right for me. You know, James says this all the time, Admiral Hitz. He's like, the narcissist is there to teach you, you know, and if you put your boundaries down in advance, then people respect you for it. If you're like, hey, don't call me after 9, you know what I'm saying? Or whatever it is, like, people appreciate that. Like, it's good to have boundaries. And really the boundaries that you need to establish are the ones surrounding your personal credo. What is it that you believe in? What are your values? You know, I went through a long time in my life not knowing what my values were, you know, but it probably wouldn't have taken me. I sound like such a redneck. Probably would have not have taken very long to sit down and just jot down for 20 minutes what I appreciate, you know, what I think is virtuous, what I admire, and what I aspire to, right? Like, that's all part of the credo. And so if it fits within there, then that's great. If it doesn't, then you're acting out of your own value set. And that's why you feel guilty, because I'll say too, some part of us is also, it gets complicated because we're also trained and goaded by society in order to kind of conform to some things. And there's some guilt there, but I think that's artificial.
One way that I heard a pendulum explained, and it wasn't really like calling it a pendulum, was just culture.
Yeah.
Culture is what does it, because it's groupings of people, right? So culture is a lot of the time what looses you, and it keeps you from individuality and authenticity. I'm not saying it's all bad, but I'm just saying that's kind of what it boils down to.
Well, yeah. In one of the earlier chapters, he talks about the idea of, I think it's heart and mind, where the heart is just, that's where you find your values. And the mind is basically taught, you know, how to sort of run that program. And it will push your heart into a bit of a box, you know, through culture and through the norms that you have. You know, that's the tabula rasa part. The tabula rasa part of you is the mind, right? And that's the theory of the blank slate, that we come into the world of blank slate. But it's not, you know, one way or the other. It's where like our mind is a blank slate. We can learn any language, we can learn any manners and customs, but our heart is not a blank slate at all. Our heart has its own essence, its own individuality that it came here to express in this form. So ask your heart what it wants and create those values. And you might be a narcissist. I don't know. You know what I mean? That's not for me to judge. But within your value set, you know, just decide what those things are going to be. For me, it makes you predictable if you have like principles that you kind of stand by, right? Like, that's kind of the weird part about it. You're kind of locked in.
And I used to think that was important. So it's so funny, like, what changes, you know, or how, like, my mindset has changed since become a trans surfer. Like, I just realized that it's almost better to see what you can deprogram yourself instead of, this is what I believe, this is what I believe. Well, what if you unbelieve? What if you allow yourself to be deprogrammed and not believe everything? What if you allow yourself to believe nothing for a while and then just see what happens? I think that it's so important to deprogram yourself and to test your beliefs, to allow them to be tested.
I think so too. I think it's very mature. And that's one of the things that Robert Anton Wilson did. And he talked about that with the reality tunnels. He would become a vegetarian. And then when he would walk through the supermarket and see the meat on display, he would just, you know, just cringe inside and feel so bad and you know, awful. And then he would become a meat eater and he would walk through the meat aisle and he would be like, that looks delicious. You know? So he was actively working on himself and using himself as an experiment to test, what are my true values? What is my true credo? There's only one way to find out. It's like, I would have thought that I would have loved scuba diving, but I fucking hated it. Like, it was like my least favorite thing ever. And I would have never, I would have bet the house that I would have loved it. And I thought I was going to want to become a scuba instructor. It sounded like such a great lifestyle and all that. And then my first dive, I was like, this ain't it, dude. I cut my hand on some coral, started bleeding. And then when you're under the ocean, it's like, cuckoo, cuckoo. Like, it's like gushing out. And you're like, damn, red shark. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'd be freaking out too, yeah, I think.
You go to like 60, 70 feet, you're like, your nose just starts hurting so bad. I come up and get nosebleeds and stuff. And I just didn't like it. It wasn't for me. And that's the only way I knew that.
And that's what I like about like Chaney on Project Chaney. She always says like, it's okay to change your mind. And I think that that's a good philosophy to have. You don't have to be set into beliefs or, you know, I stand by this, you know, but it's okay to have those too, you know, but it's okay to change your mind about things.
It is. It's part of the growth and development, you know, and, you know, by using your energy properly and testing it, then you're able to kind of see what is most efficient for you, what works the best for you, you know, and what is the most important thing you can do right now. Sometimes it's a walk. Sometimes it's a nap. A lot of times for me, it's meditation, you know, cultivating that space, which is not like part of the reason why reality transferring was so alluring to me is because you didn't have to meditate.
Yeah.
And you still don't have to, you know, you still don't have to, but it's a great way to open space to hear the rustle of the morning stars because you've got to figure out some way to do that. You got to be able to hear your voice.
You know, you really do. Okay. So some cool things that I thought about in this chapter that I liked was that when he's talking about the ascending and descending currents in your body, that when you're doing physical activities, like if you want to be anchored to the ground and you, like, I would think like wrestlers or something like that, you know, you'd want to really concentrate and feel the descending flow. So you're like able to stay like very concreted to the ground. And then the opposite, if you want to be able to jump high, you should really concentrate on the ascending flow, and that's how you can like jump astronomical heights and stuff. So I thought that was really interesting. And that he said that when you're feeling heavy in your head, I think you're too much in the ascending flow. Like you're not, your descending flow isn't balancing it out, and probably the vice versa. But
I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Makes you want to mess with it a lot more, you know, to play with it. Cause it's like,
If you like, feel like you need to be a little bit more grounded, right? Like you can focus probably on more of that descending flow and like calm yourself and make yourself a little bit more stoic and even. Whereas maybe if you want to be a little bit more up in the air and open to different possibilities and spontaneous, then maybe you focus on that ascending flow a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe I have that backwards.
No, I think you got it right.
I might have it backwards, but no. Ascending. Yeah. It's going up. Yeah.
I was like, I think of the spiral staircase. Cause I dream about this in my dream. So it's like ascending.
I don't know. I got, but yeah. But yeah, no.
Don't ask me to do left and right.
or time zones. No.
Yeah, I don't do time zones either. You're right. I cannot translate those at all. Like somebody has to tell me in my time zone. Thank you, Owen, for figuring that out a long ass time ago.
Hey, I got your back, you know.
You haven't driven with me yet, though. So if I ever have to give you directions in a car, you just watch where my hand points. Don't listen to if I say left or right. Right. You're wrong.
I'll just put the GPS on, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Eliminate all the issues.
She's got that sexy British accent anyway, you know.
Oh, yours is British, huh?
Yeah, she's like, oh, 0.2 miles, turn left onto 75. I'm like, oh, yeah, baby, that's great. I'm pulling onto the shoulder. No, I'm not doing this.
I'm surprised you don't have a spicy Latina. They don't have one of those, huh?
I don't know.
Harry doesn't have that voice.
I haven't checked for the spicy Latina accent. I do like the British accent. I like a lot of different accents. They're all different and unique, you know? I'm not... except for the Southern accent, not a big fan. Coastal Carolina. Maybe that's just because I've lived here, you know, for a good portion of my life. And it's just not a very, I don't know. That might have to, something to do with the stigma in the culture too. You know, we're like, if you talk like this, you can't be smart, man. Think this, that's cool. That's not all right. And as soon as someone talks like that, there's a part of me that just kind of, you know, and I'm like,
being from the West Coast, we've always thought that too. But now I see like Southern accents as pretty charming. I kind of like them.
They definitely
I finally have like erased the stereotype. I realized people can be smart and have an accent, but you know.
Thank you. That makes me feel better about myself. You know, just because I have an accent doesn't mean I hate certain people or anything. You
know? See, I would never guess you're from Georgia. You don't have a Georgia accent.
People say that I do. Like, especially like I'm in California or something. If I have a couple of whiskeys, it definitely comes out, you know, like that definitely.
Am I just getting one now? So I don't hear it as much.
I think that might be part of it. People tell me that I have an accent. I do hear it. But I think it is a little bit slight. My mom still has an accent. She says like dollars. You know what I'm saying? Like my grandmother said Miami. You know, that's how she spoke.
She Miami. That's Miami, how
for Florida.
For Miami?
Yeah.
Well, that's in Oklahoma, it is Miami.
Really? Yeah. It was so funny. I would come home and she would be like, "How was Puerto Rico, honey?" And I'm like, I was in Costa Rica. But Puerto Rico is the United States.
Italian.
Yeah, right. Like Italian. Yeah, like over yonder winder, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know. I want to find that stuff charming, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a lot of the culture and media stuff. And honestly, my own personal experiences and biases, you know, working on tree farms and working with kind of grungy, you know, redneck types that
I would rather hear the redneck Southern accent all day than like the Midwest accent.
Oh, don't you know?
Yes, it's so weird to me. Yeah. There's nothing charming about it.
Windy, eh?
It's cringy.
I don't mind that. It's all right.
No, but I don't.
Or like a Boston accent, like a pretty girl, and then she starts talking with a Boston accent, and I'm just like, you lost me.
Oh, I like it. I think it's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I don't want tough. You know what
I'm saying? Okay. Yeah. Not hot. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can see how that would be a turnoff for a man.
Yeah. It's so funny. But no, I do like most accents, but yeah. I don't know. I don't know how to pull this back into energy.
I know. I'm sorry. No, <it's fine. laughs> I derailed it.
No, it's totally fine. It's totally good. I think we've covered, you know, the majority of stuff in the chapter, you know. I'm looking over just the summary.
One thing that he does say is that, like, you already have reclaimed a lot of your energy if you are paying attention to pendulums and you don't allow them to sway you, that you don't allow them to make you swing, that you're kind of the one at the center point. So that in itself does save you a lot of free energy. And that's the thing, is that you don't need to imagine yourself as like, there's no shortage of free energy. Like that comes from the universe. There's no shortage of it. It's always there. So you don't have to save it. You don't have to store it. Like physical energy, probably yes. You know how that works. But when it comes to the ascending and descending currents in your body, they're here. They're free. They're all over the place. And you just have to remember that you are the ocean. You're a drop in the ocean, like, and a drop in the ocean is the ocean, right? So it's, the energy is there. It's free. It doesn't come at a cost. The cost to you is just to keep your attention. It's to not allow people to lose you and not to be sucked in by pendulums. So if you can do those things and practice your energy exercises to keep your currents, both like to keep your hoses from kinking and keep them wide, you know, keep those flows moving, then you really are doing a good job of protecting your energy, and it becomes easier. And then you have more energy because it's nothing that you have to store. It's already there for you. You just have to make sure that it's flowing through you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're exactly right. Just being mindful of it. Where are you putting your attention? Once you start to notice the pendulums and things, it's like, it just makes everything sort of slow down. And it's like, okay, well, when you're conscious, when you're aware, and like, what were we saying before this? It's like, why did I forget certain things? It's
yeah.
Like, why did I forget these certain practices that I know this helps me, right? Like,
yeah, I used to do this every day. Like on my drive to work, I would make sure that I, you know, activated both my channels and, you know, pushed my aura out, did all of that. I do it several times a day. And then it's like, when did I stop doing that? And now I'm reading it again. I'm like, bitch, you know better. This is so easy. Start doing it. Like, and I've done it like several times today and it feels really good. So I'm going, okay, yeah, this is something it's a non-negotiable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely something to keep at the top of your mind. However you can do that. You know, yeah, it's good to be able to put these again, processes are more superior to goals. You know, if you go to the gym every day, you're going to be in better shape. Then if you are like, I'm making a goal to lose 20 pounds and then you lose 20 pounds and then you gain 30. Ask me how I know.
You know. Oh, well, let's get into the pharmacology of it all. I don't know. I realize we probably should wrap it up soon, but he does get into the whole idea of sickness and illness. And
yes,
you always tell people like, oh, I was sick or, you know, I've been sick, but you don't ever talk about your healing. And it's like sickness again is a pendulum. And so you have bought into that pendulum and that's, you're creating that reality. And instead you should just ignore the symptoms is what he's saying when they first start, instead of going, oh, I think I'm getting sick, because you're creating that reality once you get there. And then everybody's always looking for the magic pill, like Owen's been saying, and all the drug commercials are these beautiful, healthy people. Like you don't really see a lot of fat people or freaking unattractive people in these drug commercials. They always look like they're living their best life because they took the pill, right? Well, what's that doing to your subconscious? What is that telling you? That these pills are actually like going to give you what you need to feel better and to have a great life, right? But one thing I'd like to remind everyone is that the word pharmacology, pharmacy, you know, all of them, they're all rooted in the word pharmakia, which is Greek for sorcery. So it literally is a magic pill. Like this is not, like it's literally sorcery. And if you think back to like the Smurfs and Gargamel, anytime somebody would buy a potion or he'd use a potion, you know, the sorcery, it would work for whatever they're trying to do. It would be their little love potion, but then it came with all these really horrible side effects. So they're using magic.
You don't want that. You're also like fucking up the balance. You know, this is something that I've had to remind myself of constantly, you know, because like the dish thing kind of confused me when I first read the book. It's like, if you put everything in one dish, then you offset the balance. And it's like, yes, exactly. You don't hedge your bets. You don't have any buffer. You don't have any leverage against. You're putting everything in one container and you're basically saying, I don't care about all these other things. I just want this. And then as soon as you do that, it's like a potion, right? Like that's that potion. It's like, you're going to get that one thing, but you lose everything else. So why is that so important? You know, back to this idea of just focusing on one thing, like creating one process and then growing and developing from there. You know, it's a long-term trajectory. You know, anything that's worth doing, anything that's kind of going to be a skill that you're happy to have, right? That you see other people have that you want to incorporate into your life is not something that you can just in 2 days or 2 weeks, and oftentimes even 2 years attain. You know, it's going to take time. And generally speaking, there's like several different skills within that one seeming skill that you have to develop in order to be able to master that skill. One great book, and actually I've never read the full book, but I just listened to the summary the other day by Robert Greene, Mastery. There's another book by George Leonard called Mastery, and I've read that. And he talks about how it takes 10,000 hours to become a master of something. But I liked Robert Greene's book a little bit better because he kind of segmented everything out into different processes. There's like 5 different steps to mastery. And he even says that in the apprenticeship phase, which is the second phase, that's 10,000 hours of apprenticeship. Then you start to develop your voice, you get a mentor, you surpass the mentor, and so on. So it's any of these things that we admire and appreciate that someone has done that they've been able to do. Obviously we do have some natural abilities and talents. We should 100% focus on those and do those to the best of our ability. Stay in our lane, give the gift that we have, but whatever skill that we're trying to acquire, it's going to take a little bit of time. Be patient with yourself. Take the fortress by lengthy siege. Don't put a bunch of importance on it. I want my Oompa Loompa now. I don't care about all this other stuff. I just want this one thing, you know. Ask me how.
Enjoy the magic of the process. And that's what, you know, creating those little slides, you do see the magic.
Yeah. And finding the transfer chain process and all of that. It's like, these are things that I read in the book and I somewhat understood it, but it's like, I didn't have direct experience with it yet. I hadn't failed with it. I hadn't made mistakes with it yet. So all these things, like we were talking about, you know, with your reality tunnel, tweak it. And try the exercises. You know, that's one of the things that I find that people are kind of honestly hesitant to do. They're like, oh no, if I do this and it doesn't work, then it must be bullshit. You know, but it's like, no, if you do it once and it doesn't work once, probably you just need to try it again and see if you can tweak it and try something different. How many times did it take Thomas Edison to invent the light bulb or whatever? You know, it was like, hundreds and hundreds or something of times before you finally got it.
Yeah. And that's why I really, David Key, he does this whole NLP course, and in it, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, there is no failure, only feedback. And if you adopt that philosophy, then it's like, let's just tell you what not to try next time, you know, and that's basically what Edison did. He didn't take it as failure. If he did, he would never have invented the filament for the light incandescent bulb. He would have quit. We wouldn't have light bulbs.
Yeah, it's really hard. I told, dude, no one understands this better than I do. I can promise you. Like, I feel like some of the experiences that I've had over the past several years have really just been, first of all, they're beneficial to me at an emotional level to be able to be more resilient and to be able to, you know, just be a stronger person, but also they've been given to me so that I can help other people shortcut some of the mistakes that I've made. And so that there's a clearer process that they can begin to implement. I mean, obviously everything's going to work a little bit differently for everybody, but, oh, I love that. Fail first attempt in learning. That's exactly right. Like, the learning curve is gnarly. Right. Like, you got to see the learning curve where it's like, and it just like nosedives over. And then you finally get the upswing on it.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Fear Factor. Like, did you ever watch that show? That last thing was always like some crazy stunt. And the first person who went almost always lost. And it's like, because by the time I'd always want to be last just so I could watch everybody else's failed attempts and know what not to do. Like, there is a power in that.
No, that's a great strategy. 100%. It definitely gives you, you know, a little bit more time to process and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to try. You can go out there and fail. And I mean, that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years doing comedy, you know, and it's like very frustrating, can be very isolating. You're by yourself a lot. It makes you question yourself at a deep level and to go super deep. But for me, that's been so beneficial. It's been a lot of pain sometimes. It's been very difficult, challenging. But the more that you embrace those challenges, like, the more character you're building. I remember when I was a kid, I was always on the worst team in baseball. And we get beat, like the Bad News Bears and shit. And I got so sick of it because I was actually pretty good. I was pretty athletic. I was good at baseball, you know, and I wanted to be on a good team. You know, I wanted to be on the Cardinals. They had the nice jerseys and the nice, you know, everything. And we had the mesh hats and they had the fitted ones, you know, they were super bougie. But I would always come off the field and hear the same thing. Losing builds character. And I'm like, I don't want character. I just want to win, you know. But as I've kind of gone through some other things, I see the value in it. You know, you start to see people who are sort of entitled, who not in a good way. I think there's kind of a good entitlement where you believe that you deserve to have certain things. And there's a not so good entitlement. And sometimes I think we have to prove it to ourselves. It's like, well, I've got to do X amount of time, you know, 10,000 hours, let's say, fill it in the blank before I can allow myself to have this thing. And I think that's part of it too. It's just like, you just continue down the path, and through doing that and failing first attempt and learning, and then your second, third, and so on, then you begin to create something that's completely different and unique. And that's the only way to do that. If you took a model and like a cookbook type of thing, and then you put that into practice, you would become nothing more than what? A parody. And so you don't want to be a parody, because then you have no authenticity. You don't have any specific soul. You don't have any fingerprint or uniqueness in whatever your art form is. But you know, you've got to get, the path to greatness is paved with mediocrity. I'm so sorry, but it just is something that I've had to deal with myself. So
do you want to touch on aging first, or like before we?
No, I think you should do that.
Okay. Well, we have talked about this quite a bit. Like, I know I have, but he does expressly talk about it in this chapter on energy. And he basically says that, imagine if, you know, when a baby is born, they're surrounded by people who are 300 years old. Now, how old do you think that the baby's going to live to be?
300 years old.
Yeah, probably 300 years old, because it's not conditioned to believe that it's limited and that it has to age at a certain rate. But really, that's the story we're fed from infancy. We're fed like the story that we age and we get old, and that, you know, we have to look old at a certain age. So some of it, yes, is biological, but we do know that our cells are regenerated every 7 years. So you do have a new body every 7 years. But how much of what we look like and how our body falls apart and all that is really just programming. And it's not necessarily genetic programming. I can tell you that genetics plays a very small factor in all the things that happen in your body physiologically. And it's almost all epigenetic. So that means that it's like little switches that are flipped on because of your conditioning or your ancestors' conditioning. It's not genetic, it's epigenetic. So if aging is quite natural, or quite possibly not natural. And to bring it back to Carlos Castaneda, Don Juan said that you can reject that contract. He said that you can reject any contract that you didn't consciously agree to. And that was one of them. Aging is one of them.
Robert Anton Wilson, again, had similar ideas regarding that, right? Like it was conceptual in his mind, and and that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I love that. I love that you touched on that. One of the places that we're going to go, I hope, hopefully there's time. There's this place on the way to Florida from here that is apparently the Fountain of Youth. So I'm going to be there next week trying to shoot a video. I'm going to shoot some videos on the road.
Ooh, period.
Why not have fun? Shoot some videos on the road. We're going to be getting forked, or we're going to be forking, dishing and taking. It's going to be a lot of fun. Vibrational alchemy.
Not to be confused with scissoring.
No, that's different.
Sorry.
That's when you take the forks and you just do a little bit of that number. But I'm really excited. It's going to be super fun. I'm getting all my poop in a group for all of this now, and really excited to be chatting. We'll be chatting this next Tuesday, but I'm hitting the road the day after next Tuesday to go to Florida, New Orleans, the Grimerica thing. And again, if you're anywhere near Boone, North Carolina tomorrow, hit me up. And yeah, come see me. I'll be doing 30 minutes of comedy.
Sweet.
Opening up for Alex Malt at River Street Ale House in Boone, North Carolina. It's a beautiful place. I've never been there, actually. I've been to Asheville. It's just north of Asheville. In the mountains, there's a lot of really cool places to kind of go and hike, and a lot of really cool outdoor environmental kind of activities and stuff there. So I'm going to try to get there kind of early, see if I can't poke around a little bit. It's always a busy day when you're doing a show, though. It's like a lot of a lot of things to kind of try to get done and be prepared and all that kind of stuff. So long drive is about 4 hours, and I'm gonna try to come back tomorrow, and then I'll be in Nashville this weekend. So I'm going to see a couple people in Nashville, really excited to see them. And
I want to go to Nashville this weekend.
Come on down, you know, like, I mean, let's fucking party.
Well, maybe I will.
Yeah. I mean, Easter's Sunday. So I don't have, I'm going to come back to Atlanta on Sunday, but I don't have a show that night or anything. So I don't really have to stress too much about getting back. I've been producing shows on Sundays and Thursdays. Also, I do have a show on Thursday. So come out to that if you're in Athens. And then Friday night, I'll be in Nashville. Saturday night, I'll be in Nashville with Abby. Hell yeah.
Yep.
Come see us. I'm doing some weird podcast thing in like some goth kid's basement. I don't even know what it is. You know, this is the path to comedy. You know, you just got to do a weird podcast.
Be careful.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are Satanists or something for sure. It's like some people.
Rituals.
I've just never understood Satanists, though. I mean, you know, he fucked over God, right? Like, does it really make sense? Do you think he's going to be loyal to you? Like, you can change him. You know what I mean? Like, who are you, lady? You know? And it's like, I don't know. Some people just like toxicity. I guess they just like toxic relationships, you know, or maybe the taste of ghost blood. I don't know.
They want to feel important. So they have to, they want to feel authentic. And yeah, so they buy into the pendulum instead of expressing their authenticity.
Yeah, maybe so.
Because people are afraid to be weird.
I think so. I'm afraid to be weird. I have to like kind of push myself in order to do it.
I know, but it's so fun when you finally do lean into your weird and you're like, that's when you're the most charming and people actually do like you, I think.
I think so too. That's a very, yeah. It's a very endearing quality, you know, and I really appreciate that. People who are themselves, and especially, you know what, you know who I really like? I like people who can laugh at themselves. Those are my favorite people.
Absolutely.
That's such a beautiful quality. And it's sometimes we get so wrapped up in our heads, we forget that we can be the joke. That's the great thing about doing comedy is it's like 99.9% of the jokes are I'm joking on myself. You know, I don't always do self-deprecating humor, but most of the time I'm in the joke. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's much less alienating if you're the one who's kind of the part of the punchline than it is if you're calling people out. And don't get me wrong, I think comedy is there to speak truth to power too. And I do have some of that in my act, but you know, I think it's fun and also it shows that you're secure with yourself if you can laugh with yourself. And
yes, it does.
To be the case. It's a beautiful thing. So much, much love out there to everybody. Make sure to, what do they do in Egypt? They like took your heart and they weighed it against a feather. And
yeah, your heart and a feather.
I don't know if I can currently live up to that. I don't know, man.
Then you don't get to go on to the afterlife, buddy.
I'm going to work on it. I'm working on it. I'm getting better. It's just, yeah, sometimes the world puts some pretty interesting obstacles in your way and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to deal with this. And we learn. This is how we learn. We learn through time and failure, you know, first attempts in learning. And continuing to.
Well, and failure is living without regrets, I think, because at least you fucking tried, right? I mean, you regret the things you didn't try.
Yeah, no one lays on their deathbed and regrets the things they did. They regret the things they didn't do.
Yeah.
So sad. So true.
It is. And you'd have a heavy heart, so.
You would. You would
make it a game, y'all.
Yeah, make it a game. Make it fun. It's like I get in my head about all this because, like I said, it can be isolating doing stand-up comedy. It's not what I thought it would be, you know. And I do love it. I do love all the aspects of it, and really, really love the community and the scene that we have here in my little town, which makes it even more fun to go and travel. Yeah, my buddy opened up for Patton Oswalt tonight. It was a killer show all the way across the board. Patton Oswalt's so funny, and my buddy Lanny Farmer. So funny, killed it. And I'll have him in tow, like I said, at the Bigfoot, befriending Bigfoot thing, and I'll be doing some stuff too, something that can't be seen anywhere else. So check it out. And come see me, Eclipse of the Canyon, and along the way, New Orleans, Austin, Houston, and Panama City, Florida. I'm actually two nights in New Orleans now. I just added another night. So if you're in New Orleans, hit me up. If you're in Austin, hit me up. I hit up Jake Loco Torondo. He's in Austin.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to meet with him. I'm going to see my friend Tiff Feedy.
How fun.
It's her birthday. We're going to have so much fun. And I'm super excited. I probably need to get out of the house. I've been here in this town, and I love this town. Like, again, beautiful place. But it's good. You got to change the scenery, get out, see something new, you know, get some fresh perspectives and vibes. Yeah, laugh at yourself. Love yourself enough to be able to
not take yourself so seriously.
To let go. Well, cool. I think that's pretty much it for energy. Everything is energy, your energy.
Protect your energy.
Cultivate it, maintain it, be a good steward of it. Give good energy as much as you can. And
there's no shortage of it.
Yeah, it's infinite. It's out there. It's just a matter of how much you can take on and how much you can use. So that light, that heart feather light heart, that's going to definitely open up those energy meridians, right? Less importance
and yep.
More silliness, more, whimsy. Love that word. More whimsy. Make life whimsical again. Oh, I got a funny joke to tell you when we end this.
All right. I look forward to it.
all right, everybody. Thank you so, so very much. Thanks for everybody in the chat. Beads. Great comment. Brittany Pickle Spears. You're awesome. Hey, if your brother is not doing anything, I'll put him on the guest. I don't know if I get a guest list. I probably do. Anyway, we'll figure it out. I don't know if they're cool and all that. Or you have any recommendations for what I should do in Boone for an hour or two. I'm probably just drive the downtown and look through. Facebook users, thank you for hanging out. I can't see who you are. It's weird. It doesn't come through in the stream yard. Ryan is not amused. Thank you so much. If Carla McCarley's there, much, much love to Carla. If you're hanging out in the chat, I just can't see because it says Facebook user. Sometimes it's Ham Cow. Could be Ham Cow hanging out, chatting with us. We love you guys and we appreciate you. Laura, Brittany Beads, everybody. Y'all are awesome. Ham Cow Meow. Hey, Cow. All right. Y'all have a wonderful night. We'll see
you. Good night. Cheers.
Oh, God.